Okay. I'm Paige.
What up? I'm Seth.
And you're listening to Shoot Without Script. So, Seth, for our listeners who don't know you, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself and what you've done and continue to do for the Broadway community?
Alright, I guess in a nutshell, I started out as a piano player on Broadway in my 20s, and then I sort of segued to being a comedy writer, and I was working on Rosie for a lot of years, doing both piano playing and comedy writing, and then doing stand-up, blah, blah, blah. So now, essentially what I do is, I'm the radio host on Sirius Satellite Radio of Broadway's Best, and I do a lot of benefits. That's kind of my career.
Okay.
Hold the phone. Don't hold the phone. That's weird. There you go.
Okay. How did you get interested in theater and Broadway?
Definitely my parents. They played Broadway music my whole life growing up. Like, I had a tape of myself when I was 2.5, singing along with the Most Happy Fella, the most obscure show in the world. And I was like, wah! Speaking of Most Happy Fella, I got a phone call. I don't know how that's related.
Hello?
Louie?
So, how did you get interest... Oh, no, I already see that one. Sorry. How did you get so involved in the Broadway community?
Well, when I graduated from college, I became what's known as a sub piano player, which is like being an understudy. So, I mean, I had worked in summer stock before then, and I did an internship at the Equity Library Theater, which is kind of like summer stock in New York City. So I kind of like was getting connected with theater people. The summer stock people moved to New York City, so they began to sort of become, you know, at least enmeshed in the business. And the point is that the more people you know, the more things lead to. It's not like I began on Broadway, but like every small thing you do leads to something else. So by the time I began stepping on Broadway, even though the first show I did was a big bomb for my favorite year, which I re-entitled My Favorite Week, the conductor of that wound up connecting Kiss of the Spider-Woman, so I got that show. And then the pianist I was playing for Kiss of the Spider-Woman, his best friend was a pianist for Phantom of the Opera, and that's how I got that. And literally to this day, I'm still playing Phantom of the Opera. I mean, I've been stepping on that show for like 15 years. And just the more people you know, the more it leads to something else. And then, you know, when I was playing for Grease, I got asked to do Easter Bonnet competition, right, the opening number for that, and it went over really well, and Rosie O'Donnell was in the audience, and then she said, can you come write for my TV show? It's just like everything always snowballs to something else, so you just gotta do a lot of things, and they all lead to something else.
Okay. Okay, so what is your favorite show of all time?
Oh, please, I don't have an answer for that, but I'll tell you, like, my top five.
Okay.
Evita, totally obsessed with, but only really with Pat of the Poem. I'm not interested in anybody else singing it. It's like never worked for me. So Evita, especially with that nightmare that did the movie and knocked it down with no vibrato. Don't even get me started. Dreamgirls, every version I'm obsessed with. It's like total opposite. Like, I can listen to every, like, national tour, bus and trial. I'm obsessed with Dreamgirls. Chorus Line, obsessed. West Side Story, obsessed. So Chorus Line, Evita, Dreamgirls. Yeah, those, definitely those are the top four. And then, like, you know, the last top fives.
Okay. So, you talked about how you are a member of the comedy writing team for Rosie O'Donnell. What was that like?
It was alright. It wasn't what I wanted it to be, because it really wasn't that much comedy writing, but we were forced to be there every single day from 7:30 to 5, kind of for no reason. So, like, it was sort of fun, like, when we got to do things, but besides that, we just, like, played a lot of pranks on each other. Like, my friend Linda knocked something out of the window. We were in 30 Rockefeller Center. It's a kind of a high window, and she knocked a little thing out of the window. Well, one of the other writers got one of the security guards to come up and say that someone had been injured and might die because they hit them. And he's like, did anyone in this room knock something out of the window? And of course, she was freaking out. Like, we would just literally do pranks like that. Or she would put a hard-boiled egg in the refrigerator every day and write her name on it, Linda. And then she would, like, crack the egg and peel it. So I replaced a hard-boiled egg with a real egg with Linda on it. So it was just, that's what we spent our time doing and getting paid residual money for, being immature.
Fun. So how did you begin this talk show?
I was doing the Rosie O'Donnell show, and Martin Short was on the show, and they were doing a number together, and Rosie couldn't do the number because she had just flown in from doing the Grammys. She couldn't do the rehearsal, so I was asked whether I could do the rehearsal or not. And I was like, yeah. So I did the rehearsal, and it was filmed, and all the other writers were like, oh, you're so fun, why don't you perform more? And I was like, oh, I don't want to perform anymore. And I was like, I don't. So I was like, what the hell am I thinking? I totally want to start performing. So I called my agent, and I was, or an agent friend. He wasn't quite my agent then. And I was like, I want to start doing more stuff. And the one thing that I think I have going more than anybody else is personality. So I want to do my own talk show. And he said, why don't you do a live talk show? And then we could put that on TV. So I called my mom, Sydney Meyer, And I said, can I use your space once a week to do a talk show? And I didn't even know what, I really didn't know what I was going to do. I'd never done a talk show before. I didn't know a format or anything. But I came up with this idea, and I got, who was in my first show? Saturday Night Fever, the lead from Saturday Night Fever. And my friend Jack said that I'm also good at showing embarrassing videos. He said, why don't you make the people that come to your show bring an embarrassing video, and that could be your signature. And that kind of became the signature. Like, I interviewed them, and then I make them all bring a mortifying video from their past. And that was in December 1999. And we, you know, I did it all, it's all as a benefit, it's all for Barbara Cares. People think I can make money off of it, which is crazy. It's all for Barbara Cares, I have Free Fights AIDS, I have all the DVDs with Barbara Cares, I have all these volunteers that help me sell it. And raise it, I mean, it's raised at least like $50,000, so I'm sure, actually like a lot more than that, but I don't really keep track. But it's been a lot, and it's been a lot of fun.
That's cool.
I haven't actually gotten on TV yet, but whatever.
So what's your favorite person to interview?
I don't have an answer for that either, but I'll say that the people that I've been in the business the longest and that I grew up listening to are, of course, the ones I'm most obsessed with, because I can ask them questions like I've always wanted to ask them. So Betty Buckley, it was fascinating to me to talk to her all about Evan Drood and about Carrie and about Cats, the stuff that I've grown up completely listening to. Graciela Danielle, who's an original Chicago and Promises, Donna McKechnie, like all these people that I grew up wanting to know, like, what was their initial audition like? How did you come up with that moment? All those people that have history, like, it's been amazing for me.
Okay. So you've been doing the weekly recaps for Greaser, the one that I want for Playbill.com. How did you get started doing that?
Just Andrew Gans wrote me, and he said, will you write... Andrew Gans runs, he does Diva Talk. I said, will you write a weekly recap? He knows I'm obsessed with reality shows anyway. I said, will you write a weekly recap? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you can't be too mean. I was like, So, that was kind of a problem. But I figured out a way to be passive aggressive and not too mean. But it's all worked out.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, in terms of favorite stories, I'll just say that my favorite story that I heard in the Chatterbox, well, I've actually had a couple of them, but I guess one of them was, I gave people the interview. Priscilla Lopez, and I tell the story in my book, so if you've heard it, excuse me. But Priscilla Lopez was doing the show called Her First Roman, and her hair was too short, and for to wear a wig, like the wig kept like pulling out her hair because she had to pin the wig to her short hair. So she put a wig cap over her hair and stuffed her underwear underneath the wig cap to make it fluff out. So she told the other dancers, you should try that. It's gonna be fabulous because I can fluff out your wig cap. So she said they were doing a scene, and she had all this body paint on herself because she's supposed to be Egyptian. They're doing a scene where they're walking around a coffin. It's a very solemn funeral scene. And the woman in front of her was this tall, beautiful black dancer, and she had a full-out white bra swinging from the back of her wig because obviously she's taking Priscilla's advice but didn't really stuff in the underwear. So Priscilla's like, oh my God, what? I created a monster and started laughing, but it's a funeral scene, so she's like, must not laugh. So of course she's holding it in. The laugh didn't come out, but her pee certainly did. Full-out started to pee on stage, body paint dripping off the leg, and the stage was raked, meaning it's like a ramp tilted, so all the pee was literally running over the edge of the stage into the orchestra pit. So I'm obsessed with the violinist being like, why am I getting wet? It's literally the urination of one of the actresses. So I've gotten some pretty good stories out of people off there.
Wow.
Thank you.
So what is your opinion on the current trend of making movies into plays and plays into movies?
It's fine. I mean, like, first of all, it's been around forever. Carnival is based on the movie Lily, and She Loves Me is based on Chef Around the Corner. I mean, it's been around forever. I mean, it is sort of lazy in a sense, because it's just sort of like, oh, that was a hit. Let's make it into a musical. But sometimes it's great. I think Hairspray is amazing. I mean, I think sometimes it's great. It's just a question of, like, and then the whole thing of why can't there be an original story? It's like, how many original stories have there been? Almost everything's based on, West Side Story's Romeo and Juliet. Almost everything's based on something else. There are very few purely original. I mean, A Chorus Line is totally, like, completely original. But Chicago is based on a movie, I think. But the point is, everything's based on something else. So I don't really mind it, but I do find it is sort of the easy way out. Really, I don't mind that as much as you just got to have the right skill. It's like Hairspray works. It had a great, great composing team. Mark Sheamus got women. I mean, wrote brilliant songs. That's how the show works. So that's what's going to make or break the show. Not whether it's a good enough movie to make it a musical or not. You have to have the right creative staff to do it. So that's more my concern. It's like, why aren't there better composer lyricists around? Why are there so few? It's kind of devastating that they're just not that, I mean, that I know about, they're not that many. It's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the movie conversion that I'm looking to see is Legally Blonde, because
I love the composer. I mean, I don't know the woman so well, but I mean, the composer wrote Bat Boy, and I love Bat Boy.
I heard part of the music, and I like it so far, but I want to see how it plays out, because it's such a commercial movie. Like, little girls are going to be like, ooh, that would.
I know. I have to say, I was talking to somebody about it, and they were like, one of the people involved in it, Charmaine Amos, but she was like, it's a really inspirational story for women. And I said, why? I said, she's really skinny and blonde. What's the hard part? And I said, well, I mean, people treat her like, you know, she's not. I go, right. But I go, people are totally obsessed with her, but she's skinny and blonde. I said, it's not about like somebody like unattractive and poor. It's about an incredibly rich person who's beautiful. What's the hard part? Where's my inspiration? Like, you can get ahead if you're rich and beautiful. Like, of course you can. Anyway.
Okay. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the extraordinary people reading that you're doing on March 5th?
Oh my God, besides the fact that I'm panicked. It's this great theater company called Tweed, and they put on these movies where they just pretty much have the script verbatim, and you just sort of kind of exaggerate your characters. So it's not really particularly broad. It's just something hilarious about seeing these movies that were kind of really serious in their day, kind of a little past their prime, and then redoing them. And I'm playing the psychiatrist, Dr. Berger, who Judd Hirsch played, and it's just very an earnest Upper West Side, just a stereotypical Jewish Upper West Side psychiatrist, even though it's in Illinois, it makes no sense. And, you know, Julie Halston, who's hilarious, is playing the Mary Tyler Moore part, and I'm upset every time they say to her, he's seeing Dr. Berger. She goes, Jewish? Like, seriously, in the movie, and they go, I don't know, maybe German. She's like, oh, okay. It's just hilarious. It's a lot of anti-Semitism. So, anyway, that's this Monday, and I'm really looking forward to it, but at the same time, like, you know, I've seen so many brilliant ones before. I don't want to be the dead fish in the water. I want to be as funny as everybody else, so we'll see if I suck or not.
What is the most memorable moment or event of your career so far?
As usual, I can't say any in particular, but I'll give two. One was writing the opening number for the Tonys in 1998, which was where Rosie wanted to become a diva. And, you know, I got to pick with her, slash me, got to pick three divas, and it was really like my favorites, like Patti LuPone, Jennifer Holliday, and Betty Buckley. I mean, it was unbelievable that, you know, these women I grew up obsessed with, I got to write an opening number for the Tonys, which I grew up watching. So it was just like my head was coming off, like, and how all my dreams are coming true. And then Dreamgirls, I did a benefit of Dreamgirls. I'm working on Some Mamas right now. Here, they don't Some Mamas. This one night thing for the Gay Lesbian Synagogue, and Lilia Swipe came in to sing Effie, and I was just playing the piano, and I freaked out over how good she sounded, and I said, one day I've got to conduct a full orchestra with you doing Effie. And I went to different charities, and finally the Actors Fund said yes, and I said, I can get Audrey McDonald to be Dina, and we just thought it would be like this kind of fun thing we put up, and it turned into this like mega thing, and it raised like $1 million for the Actors Fund, and we got a CD, and you know, it was something I just put my mind to, and like it suddenly happened, and it was really like unbelievably thrilling. So those two things I would say were like thrilling for me.
Okay. Yeah, I really liked Hair. I downloaded the full soundtrack.
Oh my God, I loved Hair.
After reading the book, I downloaded the full soundtrack.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's, oh God, that CD. I feel every singer is at the top of their game. They sound amazing on that CD. Thank you.
That was really good. Okay, so you have so many facets to your career. If you had to pick one, which would you pick?
Oh God. I guess sort of being a personality because, quote unquote, not like Paris Hilton, but like being able to sort of like be funny and be passionate and impart my wisdom, quote unquote wisdom, and convince people what's brilliant about Broadway, like that kind of thing where I get to sort of like, maybe it's hosting, I don't even know the word of it, but it's just like just being able to talk to people and impart my point of view and try to convince them and be funny at the same time. Like, that's my favorite thing to do. I could do that, like, all day long. And I essentially do. I just don't get paid for it. But I'm always talking to my friends and being like, you've got to listen to this. Watch this.
Okay. So why don't you tell the listeners about your book?
I have two books. Oh. I have one that came out already. I'm chewing crazy toffee, which is delicious, but also pulling out my fillings. That part's not cool. Alright. I have one book out called The Q Guide to Broadway, which is like my hosting but in a book. So it's like all the stories of, this taffy is killing me, people. Alright. So all the stories, all the inside stories I know about working on Broadway, from my interview show, plus from working on Broadway itself, and all my advice about how to get tickets, how to stalk your favorite star, I mean, find your favorite star's autograph / stalk them. What CDs you have to own. It's just kind of all my advice in one book, and that's called The Q Guide to Broadway, and I'm so happy that it's all in a book form. So it feels like all my knowledge diffused into one book, and I guess get my opinion out there. Part two, I have a novel coming out called Broadway Nights, which is about a sub-piano player, not unlike myself, who works on Broadway. But it really is a fiction novel. I mean, there are obviously elements that are completely based on real people, but it's a fiction book, and that's coming out in September. I'm in the middle of editing that right now, but it's all about Broadway, and you know, being a pianist and dealing with the craziness and cheap producers who shall remain nameless but are incredibly transparent when you read the book and you realize who they are. Don't sue me, bitches.
Okay, what tips can you give to others about how to get started in this area of...
It's like, listen to as much as you can. There's a lot of lack of knowledge of Broadway out there, and if people on Broadway, it's like devastating to me. Like, I did a Broadway event with Don McKechnie. I'm like, half these people working on Broadway, like, who's Don McKechnie? It's like, are you effing crazy that we have, like, living legends still around that we can talk to and you don't even know who they are? Like, it's horrifying to me. So you're not allowed to only listen to Wicked Wands. You have to listen to other CDs as well. You can't just listen to, like, the last two hot shows. Like, you have to go back to the 50s. What I would do is I would go to the library. I would take out 10 records. That's right, I said records. 10 records. And listen to them, whether I knew them or not, and there were always some songs that I became obsessed with. So don't just be an idiot and listen to the same thing over and over again. Believe me, I do that, and that's really enjoyable. But you have to take out stuff you don't know to learn about Broadway. So take out as much as you can. Get those videos of the Broadway the Golden Years. Get the Tony Award ones. Watch brilliant performances and see why they're brilliant. Form your own opinion about why they're brilliant, and then try to bring that into your own performing. And then, like I said before, everything you do leads to something else. So do not wait for your first Broadway show to begin actually working. You have to do as many opportunities as you can because they all lead to something else. Like, you never know who's going to become famous. I was talking to my friend, I interviewed Harvey Evans, and he did West Side Story, the movie. And he said there was this guy that kept running around during West Side Story. His name was, they call him Little Davey. And he was always like, where's the party? And I'm like, oh my God, Little Davey's driving us crazy. Because he grew up to be David Geffen, the most million-dollar powerful person in Hollywood. Yeah. So it's like, you never know who your Little Davey's going to be. So just, like, do as many things as you can and be as nice to as many people as you can is my advice.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
It's all good.